listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Too early. Got to go again. You got to go? Yeah. Everyone relax. This is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching. I wonder if they ever did that on Top Gun. He goes, no, you've gone too early, mate. I'm not ready. I haven't turned the plane on
Will,
yet.
Will did his hand signals, but he didn't wait for the digital countdown. So as mentioned.
Well, I was trying to time them with the digital countdown today so that the thumbs up was ready as the one counted down and you were ready to go. Like normally I've been doing it, you get the countdown, then you get the hand signals. But I just thought I'd incorporate the two, but you were not up for that.
I probably should have warned you that's what I was going to try to do. I'm now editing the full-length Patreon videos that people can check out by signing up to Patreon for as little as a dollar a month.
Good plug up the top. Good wedging in of additional content that is available.
Plenty more plugs for Patreon coming in this episode. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
but that has now become like that's the intro of the show. Like it's just you doing that and people seem to like it. So
right.
I didn't want to lose it.
Okay. So yeah, don't want to lose the signature bit. Getting a bit of traction, getting a bit of momentum. Getting a bit of that, like, you know, Charlie and Will colon Maverick. Yeah. Energy to the podcast.
Do you watch Barry, the TV series Barry?
Here's what I'll honestly tell you is have I seen Barry? I think I've watched the first episode about two-thirds of the way through about four times based on everybody telling me that it's a really good show and like that I would really love it. And from everything that I've heard about the TV show, it's got all the ingredients of something that I would love. And yet somehow, like, my brain just will not let me get through the first
episode. Grinding through – that's season four now, which I believe is the final series. And it's so relentlessly dark. And also there's no likable characters in it. Everyone – because it's a satire of, like, LA and Hollywood in a way. That's part of it. And then it gets increasingly darker through the series to the point where it's – you know how, like, The Hangover went from being – like just a kind of, you know, funny, a comedy.
A funny
to then
movie.
The third one being somebody confronting
really
violent,
horrible, disturbing, Lars von Trier-esque fucking social experiment. Yeah, I remember.
I mean, Barry is a more artful example of that. But I'm kind of like Will Anderson with Smallville in that I'm just a completionist now. Like I'm not enjoying it. Like it makes me anxious. Like I watched season three. I binged it on a flight overseas. And that's a terrible place to watch an anxiety-inducing show when you're on a fucking plane and can't get out of your seat. And then I started watching this one while, you know, I've been solo parenting for like, you know, the last week and a half and a bit stressed out and tired. And then you just want to relax the bit TV. And then with the world being so horrible at the moment, I can't seem to escape just misery and depression and stuff. But this is all a way of saying there is an episode in season four and I was hoping you had seen it, but maybe we can deconstruct it without it. There is a joke, and season four is very light on for jokes. There's no real kind of like, you know, it's mainly just a drama. But Barry, spoiler alert. In season four, Barry's in prison. And one of the cartels send in two hitmen to kill him. And there's this really low-key joke about the two hitmen they're sending in have a podcast. And it's sort of this really dry scene where it's revealed the two hitmen, oh, yeah, they actually have a podcast. And someone's like, well, how can they be hitmen and have a podcast? Well, no one's seen their faces. They do a podcast where they review, like, you know, gadgets and tech and stuff, but they're actually hitmen.
I mean, it'd be great if they did a true crime podcast about the crimes they themselves were committing.
Yeah, right.
Though. Like, I mean, that would
That's what I thought they were leading because I'm like, oh, that's such a bizarre setup. And the scene is shot like they play it very straight, very dry. Just a very kind of like mundane conversation about we've got to get these hitmen. Who are they? Oh, they have a podcast. They have a podcast. Yeah, they review tech. And there's no like gag or joke at the end of it. So I'm thinking, okay, well, there'll be some, because it's a satire, Barry, essentially, you know, about the narcissism of fame and all this kind of stuff. So I'm like, podcasters, like, where do they fit in the kind of showbiz pecking order? But then, like, the assassination attempt happens, or it's an attempt, but there's no reference to them being, like, one of them doesn't stop and say, hang on, you know, me and my friend are just going to talk about this for half an hour. We're two middle-aged white guys, therefore we've, you know, there was no meta commentary on podcasts. They were just literally two hitmen who were podcasters, and they kind of, that's it.
I think that that's what Hollywood has decided should be the role assigned to podcasts, because there was a little while where
it was hip.
And so, like, you know, you couldn't make a movie without some of the characters having their own podcast. So, like, I mean, even one of the Halloween movies, you know.
There was a whole sitcom dedicated to it with what's his face from Scrubs. You know, not
Zach and Braff.
I was going to call him not Ray Romano. That's right, Zach Braff.
Obviously, Only Murders in the Building. I don't know if you watch Only Murders in the Building, but it's a brilliant satire of both Hollywood and, like, true crime podcasts in particular, but podcasts in general. And it's like, it's the chef's kiss, piece de resistance. No one's ever going to do anything that involves a podcast better. Like, it's intrinsically linked to, like, you know, a murder happens in their building, hence the name Only Murders in the Building, which becomes the podcast that Steve Martin characters, Martin Short's character, and Selena Gomez's character collaborate on. Right? So it's a murder mystery, but it's also, like, you know, they're making a podcast.
Is it irritating watching them do the podcast stuff? Because every time I see podcasting on film, it's irritating and they're immediately unlikable. Like, obviously in Halloween, they're meant to be a bit annoying and up themselves, but it just comes across as a really indulgent, lame thing, like, whenever it's portrayed on film.
That's part of the joke of this, is that it is indeed that. And they've also taken some liberties with how the podcasts are recorded. Like, they don't sit down at a, you know, talking to the wrong side of microphones like we did in the early days. They have some fancy recording equipment and do a bit of yada, yada, yada.
Recording equipment? Like, yeah. Is that something we need? Do we need some recording equipment?
We need some recording. That was our problem, that I kept buying us recording equipment. And then we were like, this isn't recording anything. They were like, well, it wasn't meant to. This is for rec ordering. Yeah, have you not been ordering some recs?
Is it the brainchild of either of the stars, Only Murders? Because I have seen a lot of people say how great it is, and I'm a fan of
Steve Martin.
Also, Steve Martin is, like, the creative.
Steve Martin and another guy are the creators and collaborators.
Oh, fucking good on Steve Martin. He always does good stuff, doesn't he?
I mean,
still,
I often, when I watch it, because it is genuinely one of my few favorite TV shows. And this last season was magnificent. The fact that they managed to get a third season out of it, because you were limited by the premise of that it has to be the murder in the building. But they had this incredible parody of, like, Broadway musicals and shows, because Martin Short's character is a director. And so the murder happened to the star of this production, who was this, like, Hollywood Chris Evans type, you know, Marvel type, you know, who wanted to do some legitimate theater and go, like, back to Broadway and prove his acting credentials. What Hollywood star made the cameo as this? And this actor had to be in the series, like, in a bunch of episodes. Okay. They would have filmed a lot of it, like, in one go probably, but still had to be in a lot of flashbacks. And the whole central thing is the murder of this person. They have to be both likable, but also have some reason that everybody in the cast wants to murder them for the mystery to take place, which Hollywood actor played that part.
Okay, so is it in – you say he's like a Chris Evans, so he's a bit around about that age, white guy.
White guy around that age, probably. I said Chris Evans just because he's a bit goofier and, like, could play comedy.
Yeah,
so this person,
can do,
like,
comedy.
You'd associate with being able to do comedy.
Okay, is it Andy Samberg?
They got probably a little older than Andy Samberg, but you're not a million miles off, honestly. Same energy.
Bill Hader? No, it isn't the same energy.
No, Fred Armisen. Samberg energy.
No, he's not quite handsome enough.
No, this
leading
is
man,
like,
looks?
You know, leading man looks, but also like, you know, that he's playing it for leading man looks. We don't always associate him with, but he's played a superhero. This is a person who's
Chris
literally
Pratt?
Played.
Is it a Chris?
It's not a Chris.
He's played a superhero. Brandon Routh.
Jesus Christ. No. I mean, all good guesses, honestly. I could have seen a lot of these work, but you're missing the most obvious person that you would go to in this scenario. For a comedy, who's also played a leading superhero.
In a Marvel or a DC?
In a Marvel.
Leading superhero. Oh, Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Brilliant performance by Paul Rudd. Does everything that you want because the character needs to be like eight different things to eight different people. There's these little vignettes of, you know, people revealing what he was like to them. And like, he plays the ass out of all of it. He's so good. Meryl Streep is like a cast member of this. Wow. Like, it's incredible. It's
That's
so
Steve
good.
Martin and picking up the phone, right? Like that, getting that
yes.
cast. Yeah.
And I watch it and all I think is, if this is all that Steve Martin had ever done, you would go, gee, Steve Martin was a genius. Yeah. And this is just like the unexpected yeah. encore. We didn't even know this was going to happen.
After Father
right?
of the Bride, we thought he was done.
We thought he was just doing live tours with Marty Short. And they, you know, sang some songs and told some jokes and they were a heritage act. I didn't realize that he had like a whole final brilliant chapter left.
What I'd never have seen any of his stand-up. I know he was kind of like one of the biggest acts of the 70s.
The biggest.
Right. But is it like all prop comedy or what's he doing?
Yeah, wild and crazy guy.
Like Arrow Through the Head and stuff yeah. like that.
Yeah, surreal sort of, well, you know, mainstream-ish surreal, but characters and wild energy and short songs and sketchy
It's funny
things.
Though, isn't it, when you look at someone like him and Robin Williams, like two big comedians out of the 70s who came like massive Oscar-nominated or winning movie stars, what sort of underpins their persona is real darkness? Like Robin Williams was lovable, but there was that kind of melancholy in his life. And when Steve Martin's at his absolute best, he's just got that real fucking shit cunt energy. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
a dark dude who doesn't tolerate
plenty
fools.
Of that goes through this right. show that you're like, that's a great dark joke, you yeah. know? And yes, it comes from a real place of, and like, it's funny because I don't know if he is like that at all. He doesn't seem to be in anything I've ever read about him or the fact that he goes off and plays his banjo music with his, like, you know, band. And like, he doesn't feel like he's actually like a dark character in real life, but maybe.
There's a really, I remember seeing a documentary ages ago on the ABC. I think it was when he made LA Story in like, I think he directed LA Story in like the late 80s, early 90s, which is again, another Hollywood satire. And it's quite dark. He's got a real Larry David energy in that. But I remember watching, there's a making of that they played on the ABC. And even as a 13 or 14-year-old, I'm like, oh, man, this dude's depressed. Like, he was giving off real, like,
are you okay?
it's that classic clown kind of stereotype. It's like, I have to make people laugh because the world is such a terrible place and I hate myself and my place within it. That if I didn't.
I mean, yeah, that actually, that does make a lot of sense when you say it right. out loud like that. Yeah, that does. Yeah, that checks out.
He would have been a good joker if they had gone in that darker direction earlier, not the Tim Burton, but if you know, maybe even he would have been too old for Christopher Nolan, I guess. But still, the Joker doesn't have to be young.
No, I think that'd be a great. Not that we're asking for more
Batman superhero like, films. You know,
no, exactly.
In fact,
but
yeah,
let's not even put this idea out into AI because suddenly we're like, Steve Martin is the Joker's dad. Before there was the Joker, there was the Joker's dad.
Iona's been not getting into, but she has some questions about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's like a new film out at the moment, and I think a lot of the boys at her daycare are all into it. So it's one of these things where I tell her about it and I tell her, you know, like the mythology of who the characters are and stuff, and she's into it. But
do you say, look, they're heroes in a half shell and they're on a mission?
I do the whole rap. I say, in a half shell, they're heroes for. In this day and age, who could ask for more? The crime wave is high with muggings mysterious. All the police and detectives are furious because they can't find the source for this lethally evil force. this is serious. So give me a quarter. I was a witness. Get me a reporter. Call April O'Neill. And on this case, you better hurry.
You should do that. You should do the whole rap to her.
She didn't want to hear it. She shut me down. She literally did. I actually tried to play it to her, and she was like, I don't like this song. But so I've been watching a lot of Ninja Turtle stuff lately, because I tried to show her the cartoon from when we were kids, because I was like, oh, that seems fairly safe. But even that was just, she doesn't like anything with any kind of violence or anything like that, any kind of confrontation. But then I started watching it, without her. And I was just, I watched this documentary on Netflix about the marketing that went along with the Turtles, and how I think in their, the first year of releasing that cartoon, the marketing tie-in made $1 billion, like the toys of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And from where the comic book started, which was a joke, these two comic book artists were joking about like Daredevil and stuff, and the radioactive ooze that blinded Daredevil, what happened if it hit these turtles, and one of them drew a turtle with a ninja outfit to make the other one laugh, and it was a black and white underground comic, really violent and serious. And then with the span of 7 years, it goes from that to being a Saturday morning cartoon to then being worth $1 billion, and those guys just, and then you look at what the idea is, and it's like, this is nonsense. Like the whole, it was started as a joke. They named it as a joke. Everything about it is a joke, but somehow they tapped into the zeitgeist. Like, I'm not saying there was no kind of moves made by like their business partners, or, they weren't strategic in their story or pure in their artistic storytelling. But what are the odds of something like that becoming a massive phenomenon, such a unique niche idea becoming huge?
Well, because there must be so many other attempts, right? There must have been the
karate cockroaches from
exactly, the middle-aged Tai Chi horses or whatever
from Norway. They're massive. I don't know though. Would there, like, I know why, I know in the wake of turtles, there was,
why do the boys, like, why are the boys fascinated by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in a way that they're not? Is it because the idea of them being turtles makes them seem
The toys. I mean, even we were in like Target, and I didn't even know she knew what the turtles were, but we walked past like a whole shelf of turtles toys, and Iona straight away was like, oh, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And they just look fun, and there's weapons and there's masks and there's all these kind of things. I'm sure little girls are into them too, but they're definitely targeted towards little boys. And the toys now are like so good, like so well crafted and molded and stuff like that. Like it's crack for kids. But I don't know if it's the violence or the concept. I think it's just more, they've just lucked into something that hits all these kind of four quadrants of the
little
brain.
Little boys like violence, like the idea of like pretending to be, doing karate and whatever's always been some part of being a young person, going around and like kicking and punching,
breaking
and
things,
like pretending.
Nothing better than getting a delivery in a cardboard box with styrofoam packaging, and then you get to go out the backyard with your brother and smash it, headbutt it.
But they're turtles, so it takes some of the edge off the fact that you're doing martial arts and like doing violence because they're turtles. Mm. You're wearing masks. Kids love to wear a mask. They've costumes. Got like colors that you can identify your favorite one. That's so right. There's probably that boy band / BTS style appeal that you can say you're trying to look for a way to identify yourself. And there's these four kind of the same things, because this is a boys thing, right? Like there might be some, well, maybe it's not. It's like maybe it's just a being a kid thing, but you want to fit in. But you also want to be slightly different. That's perfect, right? Like they're things that are all basically the same, but they have different names and different colors and slightly different abilities, but you don't feel like there's like a loser one that you get stuck with. Like there's not that sort
it's
of same
true.
Hierarchy.
Yeah, right? And in the documentary I watched, the guy who created the cartoon, because he was presented with this graphic novel, dark, serious, gritty, black and white, graphic novel of these turtles. And he said, first of all, they're all wearing red masks. They look exactly the same. That won't work. Second of all, we have to give them personalities, the boy band thing, to distinguish them from one another. But it's like, so that's the obvious stuff, but it's more the the acceptance of all the quirks of, like, you know, their teacher being a rat, the fact that they love pizza, like, they just kept adding more and more ridiculous.
Yeah, but didn't they grow up in a sewer?
Yeah.
So it checks out. Like, I mean, there's leftover pizza. That's what they're finding in the sewer.
Yeah, but it's like just all the elements
down, like, there who would teach,
like,
them.
They are so
the ways of the
they're
ninja.
So ingrained in popular culture. And it's. I guess what I'm asking is, like, did they just have a brilliant idea, like a one in a billion idea, where every element of it just kind of is appealing? The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, it, you know, it sounds okay together. Or
it sounds great, and it's also kind of self-explanatory. You're like, I wonder what this is about. You're like, well, I bet they're kind of teenage turtles of some kind, maybe mutant turtles.
Well, I guess there's a suggestion of what is the tone of the entertainment, because it's so ridiculous. You can just switch your brain off and just enjoy this. Like, this is not going to be particularly challenging. The premise is so ridiculous.
Yeah, what did you expect? The amount of times they must say, what did you expect? It was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Which makes it so funny when you have all these nerds online calling for, like, a gritty, because that's the other thing. I've been having a bit of a...
Oh, people want a gritty
Turtles
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I've been having a bit of a five moment with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where I've just been watching a bunch of stuff. And so some dude online... I don't know if he's used AI or if it's computer generated, but he's created these, like, 30-second little teasers for his version of what a gritty Mutant Turtles thing would look like. And it's like, you know, just it's using the sort of model of the Jim Henson ones from the 90s, the movie that everyone knows, that kind of modeling, but a bit more realistic and stuff, but shot in a really sort of handheld dark way, or they're fighting and stuff. And all the comments like, this is the gritty Turtles movie of my dreams and stuff. And it's like, someone said, like, it's so realistic. It's like, it's a giant fucking turtle holding katana. It's like, how is that even vaguely realistic?
I would like to make an actual realistic one where they get a bunch of literal turtles. Yeah. Like, why are
these? We know turtles' dicks are, like, twice as long as their bodies.
Yeah. So we get some big-dicked turtles.
James Fosdike. He's fallen off his chair.
He's probably already got a picture of a turtle with a massive cock coming out its shell instead of a head. That's probably already on file. We've probably saved him a week of work where he's got some turtle, and instead of the turtle head, it's just a penis. There you go. No, so, like, we get some, literal teenage turtles, and we – make a documentary about trying to teach them
ninjutsu.
And we get an actual rat. We make an actual rat. Well, because that's realistic, is the point you're making, right? Like, if we – they're not really – there's no Ninja Turtles. Like, a lot of what
so,
we
yeah. – according to my calculations, Will, there are no real Ninja Turtles.
I mean, at this stage, who knows? At some stage, we might have Ninja Turtles, or we might have at least Boston Dynamics version of Ninja Turtles, where people can do rock'em sock'em real steel robots with,
You were at South by Southwest, weren't you? Did you see the robot dog walking around? Gemma sent me a video.
No.
There was a Boston Dynamics style robot. I don't know what it was promoting, if it was military. I mean, were there military stalls there?
Yeah, there was. Right.
What the fuck is – so tell me about – let's just take a U-turn. Yeah, okay. Let's talk about South by Southwest, because everyone I know went to it. Everyone seems to have a great time. And it seems to be
South by Southwest,
everything.
So Australia, people will know the international brand of South by Southwest, the very famous, like, arts and tech festival, I guess, what you'd call it, that happens in Austin, Texas. And it grew out of, I think – mostly being a music and entertainment festival, but became this, like, you know, kind of future focused, you know, festival for the entertainment industry in general, I think. And, you know, advertising and, you know, like, adjacent industries to that. And so they had a huge program of stuff. I didn't get to see a heap of it because I've been working.
Honestly, every single person I know seems to have been there. Like, I would just look at someone's feed and it's like, oh, yeah, I'm just on a panel, or I'm doing a show, or I'm on set. And it's like, I was the only person who didn't get invited.
Well, it was massive, as it turns out. In fact, a few weeks before the festival, I was starting to hear rumors that maybe it was too massive, that maybe that they had Here's what I'll tell you, Charlie, and I can say this now that it has safely been a very successful festival, is that there was a whiff of fire festival about it, I reckon.
Off your bus and get the styrofoam box with just like a cheese sandwich.
There was a lot of – so we did a live panel version of Question Everything as part of it, as part of the sort of screening festival. And it was great. Like, you know, we had 300 people like in the audience, and we did this great live version with like Mel Buttle and Nath Balvo and Alex Lee. And it had, even though it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it had a good sort of up late at night sort of vibe to it.
It's up late for you these days, isn't it? 4 p.m.
Yeah. Well, also it was their last thing for the day in the room. So it was the up late version. Just happened to be 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But the festival itself, I mean, they had some Charlie Brooker and Chance the Rapper or Nicole Kidman were a few of the sort of keynote speakers, and they had like massive, like thousands of people attending, you know, those functions. But then there was a whole range of smaller, you know, side events and side like panels and presentations and all these sort of things. And I saw very little of it, but I kept hearing that how much fun everybody was having and how and certainly from our experience of it, like doing it, it was a delight. Like it
can we get TOEFL up there next year? How do we, what do we fit under? Like, what are we promoting?
Well, I mean, honestly, they had some podcasts. Osher did his podcast. He spoke to Peter Garrett. So I think we'd have to
get someone good.
Like, I think you have to rope someone good in. Like, I don't think us alone doing TOEFL would be enough. But Adam Spencer did a bunch of things with Dr. Carl and like, you know, did like, because they both speak to the obviously to the future and communication around the future, and so they were doing. So there's some people we know that we could like, but we'd have to repitch TOEFOP as a bit like what is our pitch to South by Southwest, which is this like, you know, people are paying for a platinum pass like $1,800 or something, you know, so it's a big it's got to be an audience of people who, you know, work in the television industry or in the advertising industry or like, you know, like something like that, so that, you know, in the tech industry, so that their business think that it's worth sending them to Sydney for a week and buying them an expensive ticket to a thing to go and like see this presentation. So
what are we selling?
Our value.
How to be a survivor in the podcast game.
We're still here. Would you like your brand to stick around without any discernible growth? Yeah.
Do you want your brand to stay in stasis for a prolonged period of time?
Consistency through inconsistency, the TOEFOP story.
I don't know. I mean, I guess that is our only point of difference at this stage, is that we have just been doing it longer than everyone else. But I sort of feel like Sammy Cav did the Dylan Friends podcast a couple of weeks ago. It's a very good interview. Sammy Cav used to be our producer. And, you know, like no one knows more about like audio production in Australia than Sammy Cav. And I listened to this interview and we got a shout out and you got a shout out and appreciate it. But I was listening to him go, this is all great advice. why didn't we get this advice when we worked together? It was all excellent. I was like, oh, geez, if you followed Sam's tips, you'd have an amazing, successful podcast.
I mean, what sort of stuff are we talking about? Is there stuff we should
Dill
be doing?
So Dill has this, and I, you know, I'll call him Dill because we're mates. Dill Buckley has a podcast.
You know, haven't you been on Dylan?
No, have you?
Oh, I mean, he has asked me. I haven't had the opportunity to do it yet, but he has asked me.
No, because TOEFOP was brought up in the conversation, and he seemed to not know what it was. I don't think he's aware of who I am, but he has a podcast called Tell Me How, where he has like an expert in something come on. And so this episode was about podcasting. So a lot of it was kind of not applicable to us now because it was about how do you start a podcast.
I mean, a lot of it should be somebody asking Dill, because like Dill's nailed it. It's the podcast should be, I don't know, how did you do it? Run me through what you did.
Well, it was interesting. Well, what Sam was kind of saying is that, look, everyone does have a podcast and everyone should have a podcast. But he's gone, it's not to say, he was making the comparison like, you know, most people have Instagram and some people use it for work and are very successful with it, and other people just have it to have it as a form of expression or whatever.
Just because you buy a guitar doesn't mean you need to form a band and go on the road.
You just like playing guitar.
I always, yeah, and I because like sometimes people are mean spirited about, like, you know, when they talk to us, like, we're like, oh, you, there's so many podcasts now. I'm like, yeah, great. Like it doesn't, you know, like there's good ones and bad ones, there's successful ones and not successful ones. The thing that I've noticed recently that was really interesting, because we are so not these people, which is there's been a lot stop. You know, like even podcasts that I like have just gone,
that's enough.
We're done. That's enough.
We've clocked it. We've talked about
everything. I want to ring them and just go, how did that happen? How did you do that?
You know, it's funny. The Weekly Planet, James Clement and Claire Tonti were in Byron this weekend, and they came around for dinner last night. And it's so great seeing them. I haven't caught up with them properly in a couple of years. And so what I realized, though, when you make new friends, and like, you know, we've been friends for a while, but in terms of like sitting down and having like a good long chat, I have so many stories that they had never heard. I was just like, oh my God, it's like my gun had suddenly reloaded and I had like, you know, full capacity. And I was, because they kept asking about this. And ordinarily I'd be like, oh, I think I've told this. And I'm like, no, you haven't heard. I'll wait till I tell you this. I've got stories about everything. I've been doing a podcast for 13 years. They're all cataloged. Don't worry about it. Here we go.
I mean, it's great if you assume you're not going to see them again for another two years to reload your guns. Like if you run into them next week, they're going to be like, what happened to that cool guy? And all those cool stories.
Well, that's what I'm banking on, is the fact that there is distance between us. But it just sort of made me realize like, shit, like you and I are fronting up and either relying on just like getting onto a topic that we're both intrigued with, or one of us having something happen during the week that can sustain a 1 hour conversation. And that is like, I think that should be our angle, is like, how do you, we don't have an angle. Like we're not a true crime podcast. We're not a,
our angle wellness, is no angle, guys.
We're the no angle,
the new
guys.
Angle is no angle.
That's right. We just get up there and we,
everyone else has got a bloody angle. I wouldn't trust all these people with their angles. What are they trying to get at? You know what we're trying to get at? Nothing.
Well, that's the thing too. Like in this Dylan Friends podcast, like Dil was saying, oh, he has a lot of people will call him to say, hey, I've got a great idea for a podcast. Me and my friend are really funny. We think would be great in a podcast. And so he and Sam were having this discussion around the fact that like, well, that's all well and good, but like, is there an authentic voice to what you're are you aping someone else, or is this like an authentic voice, an authentic take? And the example Sam used was like, Mark Howard already exists when Dylan Friends came on the scene. Like the Howie Games existed, and Howie's an amazing sort of sports-oriented journalist who does these really interesting, in-depth interviews. And so that kind of market was occupied. But then Dill comes on with a much more relaxed, conversational, at first footy focus, I'm just going to chat to my footy mates, and then has slowly kind of expanded. But it's the disarming nature of the way he chats and the kind of generosity and the, he seems to have like a genuine curiosity about things, you know, and the openness of the conversation within that sporting context that makes it unique. So I guess if we were going to say what our point of difference is that we have these rambling conversations that we try and make funny, but often are not, I would argue, that go for roughly between 45 minutes to an hour's worth of entertainment. And we still have listeners.
Would you describe it as a comedy conversation between two old mates?
I guess so. I mean, I'm less than, like, is it? Is it a, like, because you watch it.
No, I know. Okay. So I agree with you. Like,
we're not always
funny. Also, you know, also what, no, we're definitely not always funny. But also, what I would say is part of the TOEFOP mythology, if you were going to look at what we were, if you were going to run what we were through an AI program and have a breakdown of like they're this much talking about pop culture, or they're this much reflecting on their lives, or they're this much looking shit up on Wikipedia, or they're this much like talking about what the show is and how they have no idea what the show is, because that has also been like, you talk about that idea of Seinfeld being a show about nothing. Like this is a show about nothing, like, and everything. But about nothing.
Yeah.
There is nothing to be solved.
Yeah.
Like there is, we are not working towards anything.
I did read a criticism of the show when people leave the Patreon, they can leave a comment like a little fuck you as I walk out the door.
That's great. Thanks,
most Patreon. People don't like leave anything, but there was one guy and he said something along the lines of, I used to really enjoy the show, but I'm sorry, Charlie telling me about the minutiae of his week just doesn't cut it anymore. I was like, but that's pretty much been, I don't know that we've changed it up or pivoted towards the minutiae of the week. I know you enjoy hearing about the minutiae of my week, but I don't think we've.
I do. But also, like, I think the thing that you've also got to take into account with, like, making this style of entertainment is that it's a specific thing for a specific time in your life. Like, I know from my point of view, I guess, like, I, you know, extrapolate how I think about this from how I think about it personally, is that sometimes the right show comes along at the right time. And then sometimes you're going through a thing or whatever. Like, I've been going through, like, times when I just wanted to listen to things that are more joyful, right? So, like, I've been listening to the Taskmaster podcast because I find it joyful. All these great comedians talking about Taskmaster. Like, there will be a time where that's not what I need or desire from what the thing is, right? And I think with a show like ours, like, sometimes it does just go through periods of being, if you took 5 episodes or 3 episodes from here or there, they are of that specific moment or time or thing that we're talking about. And they may have absolutely no relation to, because if you heard like 3 weeks in a row or 4 weeks in a row of Michael Flatley, like, and you went, oh, I guess that's what this podcast is like, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, why is Charlie talking about driving with no brakes? I like to think that, yes, the thing that makes us impossible to be able to market or sell, you know, is also, I think, what we are. I think that it would be sad for us to not find – like, the one thing we can do that is individual is that we are one of the very few podcasts that exists still that is about nothing, like genuinely about nothing.
Yeah.
Like, because I think of all the podcasts, even the, like, the ones that I absolutely love, they're still all about something, right? Even if they, it's still this idea of, like, even it's something true. Like the Weekly Planet, for example, where, like, I am there, they could talk about anything. Like, they could tomorrow decide that, you know, they were going to talk about a completely different topic and I would absolutely listen to it as much as I do the Weekly Planet. I like listening to the two of them talk, but it is a show. If I listen to Cam and Alexi or, like, Becky and Cam's show or whatever, there's still a show, even though you're there for the riffing, there is still an element of,
little dumb,
like,
dumb.
What the show is, yeah, but they have guests at least. Yeah. Like, there's a format. Like, we bring in some guests, and this is how it works. Yeah. And, you know, like, whereas, like, ours would be the equivalent of, like, we've got some guests, and now we'll never have a guest again.
I like this. I like this thinking. This is now a point of pride because it's kind of like,
it's our point of
difference. We should be stubborn.
It's our unique selling proposition.
I'm sure Mike's cutting this bench. He's got his head in his hands. Is he listening to our, just fucking this is our
South. No, this is less for Mike than it is, this is our South by Southwest pitch, right? Yeah. Like, we're trying to, like, the power of nothing, the power of not having an idea. Well, I just think, that's our presentation.
But I do like the kind of stubborn commitment to, like, this and not changing.
Not being good.
Yeah, because
regardless.
I feel like because fashion is cyclical and the wheel will turn, like, something will come back into fashion. Yeah. Or, you know what we need is we need a hip, young, creative, like, the next generation.
To embrace us.
Yes. Like, someone who comes out and is a global superstar and it's like, Tofop influenced me. That's what got me going.
Kid Leroy. Yeah. We need Kid Leroy. To, like, drop a Tofop sample, like, drop Everyone Relax into, like, his, you know, latest song that he does, and then everybody knows who we are.
I mean, that I think would, that's a, and the good thing about that is we don't have to go and chase, like, the publicity or whatever. Like, it comes to us. Like, people suddenly get curious. You know, like, didn't Kanye once upon a time, like, he retweeted someone or, like, said, hey, everyone follow this guy, is like a little kind of, you know, power move, celebrity power move. Like, we get anointed by, like, one of the biggest, like, The Rock. Here we go. That makes perfect sense. He gave you that birthday shout out And now he got curious and he listened to an episode because we mentioned him so many fucking times. And
there was artwork about him. Yeah. He clicked on it. It was one day he was just doing one of his workouts and he needed something to do.
And he does
him.
One of those videos he does in the Iron Paradise where he's like, hey, everyone, you know, be strong, work hard, go out and get some. By the way, I've been listening to these two Aussies on their podcast and they're a couple of funny son of bitches. So check out Tofop. Like, boom, suddenly our numbers explode. Do you think? Do you think it's a sugar hit? Do you think anyone sticks around after that? Hang on, I'm going to check how many followers Dwayne's got on Dwayne, The Rock has on Instagram to see. All right.
So, what percentage do you think if The Rock? So let's like while you're 30, looking up the
300. Oh my god, is this real? Hang on, I've got my glasses on. Am I the misreading?
How many?
That can't be right. 391 million followers. Okay. Yeah, all right. So The Rock gives us a shout out from the Iron Paradise. How many of that 391 get curious? We only need
1%.
1% of that, and it's what, 30 million people? Is that right? Is that 1%? 10, yeah, no, 100 times. No, that's not. That's 3,000. What was Now Spencer's just got his head in his hands. What's 1%? I'm going to type. I can't work it out. What is 1%?
It's the easiest one to work.
It's zero. What's going on?
Just have to divide it by 100.
Really? So what?
Yes.
So what's that?
100%. 1% means
so 391,000
original number by.
I'm not very good at math.
By 100.
So is that 3.91 million?
Yeah, like heaps.
Amazing.
4 million people.
How do? Well, surely it can't be. I mean, he would be getting requests all the time, right, from his mates to shout out brands and podcasts and stuff. So
yeah, but maybe like. The message everyone relax just gets to him. Like maybe I feel like he's had a little bit of bad press recently. There was some stuff around the Hawaii appeal. Just because people, you know, I would like he encouraged people to donate, and of course it all became about how rich he was and like why you know
he should give up everything he has.
But also I think he had done a lot of like you know. Personal donation and whatever.
During the writer's strike or something, didn't he donate like $2 million?
Yeah. So, but he did a video where he was like,
The Rock's a fucking communist.
I take some of this on board. It's like.
He's a socialist fucking commie.
I mean, if America gets to the point where they think The Rock is a socialist, then the new Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Rocky Sanders.
Okay. What if, like, remember there was a famous sex tape? I can't remember whose it was, but maybe Paris Hilton or like Kim Kardashian. I think it was Paris Hilton. And one of the points about it was that Chris Rock's like DVD, like his special, was playing in the background.
I didn't know that. It's funny.
Yeah. So I'll look it up.
What about The Rock is listening to Tofop in the gym, like not on headphones, but over the loudspeakers?
Yes, that's good.
So he's like, "Hey everyone, it's Dwayne. Just saying, go out there and get it. And by the way, I'm listening to these arsey sons, those funny sons of bitches in the Iron Paradise. Tofop, check it out." do we get 1% of his audience?
I mean, 1% doesn't seem like an but even if we got like 0.5%.
Yeah, we only need like 0.5%
would be great. I mean, that's what we've got. What's got to happen though. But maybe it's got to be like, maybe we are.
So what was the point about Chris Rock on the sex tape?
Oh, I was trying to find the, but I couldn't immediately find the, but yeah, I think it was Paris Hilton. It was on the Paris Hilton sex tape in the background.
That's a weird thing to have on in the background while you're having sex. Comedy.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. Incisive political racial comedy.
Big ass beans. It would be appropriate for Kim Kardashian, I suppose.
I mean, it might have been his special Bigger and Blacker, and they just ordered the wrong thing on the,
yeah, right.
The hotel menu. You know, like, oh, this will get me in the mood. Oh, a comedy special.
But okay, so let's say we do get the 1%, so 3.91 million. How many like the cut of our jib?
Maybe 1% of that.
Okay. So that's what, 391,000 now. Is that right?
No, that would be 10%.
39,000. Yeah. Okay. That's still
good. That's still good.
I'll take that. I mean, there would be certain people who would click on it and just follow and then never listen to an episode, which is fine.
What if the Rock told them to like and subscribe? Leave
this,
a comment.
Well, is this like our last hope? Is the only way this show continues is we have to get a shout out from the most famous movie star in the entire world.
I think that what you were saying, which is the idea that, you know, things go in and out of fashion, right? And maybe the reaction to everyone having a podcast and every podcast has a hook is that, like in times of, you know, music history, you know, freestyle jazz becomes more popular again, or like some other style of music that's a reaction to, you know, grunge rock was a reaction to
glam rock.
Like hair, yeah, glam rock and hair metal. And so like there is a possibility that everybody else's slickness and ideas will eventually work against them, and we could be like, like it feels like we could be like the mumblecore.
Mm.
Like, you know, there's some new era of cool young people just having conversations, podcasting, right? And one of them shouts out, oh, you know, like we could be the Pixies to whoever the Charlie and Will of the next generation's Nirvana is.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. Because I think the issue with us is when I look at the sort of big podcasts, that they're either sort of comedy, so it's a zingers galore, or they're like some wellness or mental health podcast. They seem to be the two big. They're the ones that do the big tours and all that kind of stuff. And you and I,
or true crime.
You and I touch on comedy. We touch on mental health, and like, but we don't ever like we just sort of sit right in the middle of those two things, like this in this amorphous, indefinable kind of subject matter.
Like we also talk about pop culture, which is a big successful thing on the internet. What I would suggest is we are a jack of all trades and master of none. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because when I was talking to this about with Claire last night, and she was like, oh yeah, she's going, your show might be a bit blokey for some people. And I'm like, blokey? Not at all. Like, I don't think, I mean, we have, I mean, even our Aussie Rules podcast is, I guess, the blokiest we would get, but I don't see us as being blokey. Like, that's a.
It's blokey in that we're men. Two blokes.
Yeah, I guess so.
Barely.
I mean, I have noticed a trend in kind of a content now, that which is like leaning into, I guess it's the Aussie equivalent of like that Joe Rogan, ultra masculine, you know, dropping C words left, right, and center. Like that seems to be where it's going. Like,
and I think that like if you started listening from the first episodes because they were like meant to be a bit raw and up late, there's like we never had a heavily masculine energy, but there's probably more of a like
dirty,
a drunken young man, dirty energy,
yeah,
right?
I think that's like, more like a, yeah, it's more of a like a peek inside potential alcoholism, I think.
Yeah,
hearing, I mean, like,
yeah, that's
talking
right.
To a drunk at a bar, but
yeah, I don't think that our show now is particularly blokey. In fact, I would hope that our show, and look, yeah, this is one thing that I, you know, have got feedback about over the years. And again, this is very much I'm anecdotal. And the sort of person who would give this feedback is also the sort of person who would reach out to give this feedback, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's a skewed survey in many ways.
Yeah.
But I've had more than one person reach out and say what they've liked about the show is hearing us like wrestle with growing up and the world and like, you know, changing our ideas and like having conversations about why we are different to what we used to be. And like, that doesn't feel very much like that alpha male, you know, we're never men and we're mistakes. Doing everything right. Never, like, I don't think that that's what we are at all. Like,
yeah.
And I do think that there is some value in saying there is another way to have these conversations. And it doesn't mean that you can't have fun or try to be funny or, like, laugh at dumb shit.
You wouldn't have heard it, but when we had that discussion around potato sculpts versus potato cakes a couple of weeks back we'd spoken about, you know, how our views had changed, Mike called me to say, hey, man, do you mind if I found the original conversation you guys had about it. Do you mind if I just cut it in so give people a bit of a primer on what your opinions were? And I said, no, that's fine. And then I listened to it and I'm like, who the fuck is that guy? Like, I was so fucking passionate about the, like, you know, potato cakes and this is the hill I'm willing to die on. It was like, I didn't even recognize the dude who was talking. I don't give a shit. Like, and it wasn't even that long ago too, maybe like 6-7 years ago. But that guy really was passionate about potato cakes.
I mean, that guy had grown up in a world where nothing bad had happened. That guy's seen some shit since then.
Totally. You're right. I mean, that's exactly it. Yeah, that guy hadn't seen season 4 of Barry yet. Things were still feeling pretty good about things back then. But it is, I guess it's, I just, oh my God, this must be so indulgent for people to listen to. But I do wonder, like, are we evolving? Or are we just, like, now we've crystallized into this little form? And that's what we, because I feel like the show and the shows, like I'm talking about the TOEFOP network more widely, has grown and developed and we've tried new things and we've brought in other elements and stuff. And I'm still having fun and enjoying it and feeling creative. But I wonder if, like, you know, is there a way of measuring that sort of development or change if we're way behind, like, you know, what other people are doing? You know, like there's people out there are like, you know, have you thought of pairing up your pod with this or doing this on a podcast, or, you know, people don't want to hear about your thoughts on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They want to see your dick or whatever the fuck. Because, you know? I feel like that's what, you know, I watch these kind of modern content creators and, you know, they're so vulgar and dumb. But they're charming.
I don't understand.
But they're charming. Like, I'm not saying that I get the entertainment value. It's not me.
But again, but also we are older, right?
I'm not meant to be.
You're not meant to be doing what the young people are doing. That would be embarrassing, in my opinion, to be.
So like, I can't start my Twitch stream? No?
I mean, you can do what you want. I'm not going to say it. And I've mentioned this to you, but I'm not on social media. Great if I got off social media, but I got on Twitch. I was just watching.
Live streaming you Twitch playing streams. Video games. You're just getting tips. Doing your spur of the moment commentary.
I think that idea of, look, I think we are evolving. And I honestly think not just in the sense of are we evolving as people through this show, which I do think we are definitely. And I think, you know, the two of us in a fun way, like there is an accountability to these things. It's not just discussions about the minutiae of your life. You're checking in, right? You're checking in a safe space about where you're at. And sometimes we don't have to tell the whole story of like where we are in our lives, but people can get a sense of where we are in our lives and what might be going on and then can look at how we're dealing with that through other things we talk about or the fun we're having or whatever it might be. So I think there's great value in that. And I think we both recognize that part of this podcast is about the nature of our friendship and our lives. I also think in a business sense, we're trying to develop in so much as the two of us can and have the capacity to. Like we are streamlining things. We have more of an idea of what it is we're trying to do. I do think we're more consistently being able to, look, this one might be, look, we had some good Teenage Ninja dick chat up the top before we descended into this. But I do think that a semi-regular TOEFOP State of the Nation is very much part of the DNA of this show. It's two men for 13 years going, don't worry. Don't worry that you don't understand it. We don't really either. We don't know what it is either, but it still is and it still exists. And like we're coming up on 500 episodes of this thing, right? Like
this is 489. You know,
and so it's, I think that we are like, and I am like really positive about what we're going to be doing next year and going forward. I've loved being back doing philosophy and like just talking to comedians for a year, it was exactly what I needed. And just there's still a heap of really great episodes of that in the can that people will hear over the next couple of months. And I think we are. Like, it's not a linear, process. Like, sometimes we make mistakes along the way. But I do think that we are evolving. And I don't think we're trendy.
No.
Like, we are not on trend. No. We are not hip. We are not part of the – like, when we first started in podcasting, because it was a bit, pirate radio, Wild West, we were part of something. We were doing this thing that nobody else was doing, And that was our competitive advantage. When other people started doing it, we went down the pecking order.
People with actual talent and formats. If we just fucking thought of a format, if we just come up with, hey, how about we look at this and comment?
Here's what I believe. I believe we would not still be doing the show if we had come up with a format. What format do you think that we would have come up with that we would still be doing the show all these years later?
What in the weird? A collection of humorous observations about the week's news. Look, I don't know. I mean, the closest thing we have to a format is we finish with letters, but even that we have not done for almost a month. And in fact, why don't we forward tease the next episode, because we're going to record a couple tonight. We're going to get to the mailbag because there is close to 20 messages.
Okay, great.
That we need to get through. And I also wanted to let people know.
So sometimes this podcast is an hour of us questioning our existence, and sometimes it's an hour of us answering our mail.
It's the worst podcast in the world. This is the thing. Like, it's just, I keep waiting for a moment where I'm like, oh no, it all makes sense. Like, we've been building to this moment our entire lives. Like, one day I are just gonna.
We're outsider art.
Yeah.
Man.
Like, no, but I feel like, are we in a cocoon? Like, is this chrysalis? And then we're going to just like spread our beautiful wings. It's like, oh, Will, that fucking 13 years of podcasting has led to this mountaintop moment. Or is it just more of this?
I think it's probably just more of this.
Okay. No, that's look. You know what? That's all right. No, I mean, I was disappointed. I wanted to believe in something, but I think that's.
I think it'll be slightly better than this. Okay. But
I'm going to fucking hold you to that. If it is not slightly better than this.
I believe that next year will be slightly better than this year.
Okay. All right.
I believe if we are still around in 5 years.
Yeah.
At some stage in that period of time, there might have been a moment where something happened that made it good again for a bit.
That's all right. That's one. That's all I need. That is the carrot on the stick I need.
No, yeah. A little light at the end of the tunnel to keep you signed up to this forever.
I mentioned Patreon earlier. I just wanted to let people know, if you're curious or thinking about maybe joining Patreon but you needed some further incentive, besides getting all the ad-free episodes and full-length videos and bonus content that we put up there regularly, Patreon have just released a new feature, which is Patreon Chat. So I've gone onto Patreon and I've created a bunch of chat rooms where people can do episode discussions, they can ask questions, they can connect with one another. Because the only way our fans have to do that is through like the Facebook comments or Patreon comments. And it's not as fun as doing sort of like you can actually in real time sort of interact with each other. So it'll be a couple of weeks ago now when people hear this, but I started it last night and it was fun. Bunch of familiar faces. Reed was in there. Dan Illich was in there. So it's up and away. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can join Patreon and you can join in the chat as well. We should also let people know we have a live show coming up in Sydney. The Melbourne show has sold out, but on the 25th of November, TOEFOP Live at the Comedy Store in Sydney, tickets still available. So there's a link in the episode description. Click on it now and buy yourself a ticket and come see me, Will, and special guest, who I think people in the chat are starting to figure out pretty quick.
Very, very funny special guest.
Yeah.
International special guest.
Worth buying a ticket just for that. Do you have stuff to plug?
What you're talking about, Will, my improvised shows, there's a bunch of those still on sale. So check out comedy.com.au to see if I'm coming near you. And the new tour, Will Legitimate, is actually on sale in a few places.
You should not name your show something you can't pronounce.
Will Legitimate. That's the Will Legitimate. James Fosdyke's done an amazing poster for that, of course, as he always does. And Question Everything is back on ABC TV. Check the episodes you've missed this season on ABC iView. But very fun so far. Really, really enjoying the show. So, yeah, would love people to have a look at that.
And my miniseries, The Unexplained Explained, now available in the TOEFOP feed. I had such a great time making this show with Ben McClay from the Bunta Vista podcast. So please check it out. If you like it, let us know, because I want to make more, but I want to make sure that you like it before I go to the trouble of making more of that particular series. That's it, though. We'll be back next week with a big letter episode. I'm Charlie Clawson.
Without my lesson.